Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For all those people that aren't familiar with my voice, my name is Peter Mingles. I own this whole thing. We started Building Fortunes Radio as a result of me wanting to have a voice to talk about things that some people didn't want to talk about. So I knew that we could create a platform, which we did on buildingfortunesradio.com, and I knew that we'd be able to actually spread the messages. We found interesting people, but one of my first things was I had to have great guests, and Jim Turner is an attorney over in Washington, D.C., runs an organization called Citizens for Health. They have a website called citizens.org, and when I met Jim, as a result of an organization I was working with, and he was going to maybe be helping us and stuff like that, I recognized immediately that this is an extremely intelligent gentleman who's really knowledgeable about a whole bunch of things, and we'd love to have him as a host on buildingfortunesradio.com. So from the very beginning, I asked Jim to believe in the things that we did, and he did, and here we are, however many years later, doing these radio shows with Jim Turner and lots of other people as well. But Jim's a really great guy over in Washington, D.C. He's used to be able to do our radio shows at noon Eastern time when he was in town or maybe on a road near a phone. But because of the COVID thing, he's had an opportunity to do our radio shows far more often. And as a result of that, our Building Fortunes radio listening audience has been blessed by being able to hear more of his levels of expertise. And today, for those people that are listening in, is April 9th of 2021, and we're just a few minutes now after noon Eastern time for those people that want to date this stuff. But I've got to share with you, especially with some of the things that are happening in my personal life today and, you know, over the last week or so, having the depth of knowledge of how things have changed over the years or decades is really, it's really something. I got to tell you, it's really something else. It's experiences that, quite honestly, I cherish. So I want to say thanks for Jim Turner being here and blessing us by being on Building Fortunes Radio.
Thanks, Peter. I'm glad to be here. And we didn't talk earlier, but what are we going to talk about today?
You know, I was I had a topic that I wanted to talk about maybe a couple of weeks ago. That happened that really kind of messed me up a little bit mentally, and I was just kind of curious about this, so I'll kind of lay the foundation and the groundwork. So we know that, and this is kind of like a legacy phone, this is like a legacy conversation, so it's a little bit old and probably dated, and I'm really not caught up with it, but I just want maybe your spin on this. When Donald Trump went through whatever Donald Trump threw with the elections, and regardless of whether you think there was election fraud or not, there were people that were telling their story very convincingly on both sides of the argument. And I know there's more than two sides, but on every side of the argument, people were telling their stories. There was this one gal who seemed to be very credible. Her name is Sidney Powell, I believe, and she was an attorney, or is an attorney, and speaks very intelligently. I can't poke any holes in her, meaning like the few exposures that I've seen her speak. I'm like, this gal has sharpened her skills. She's very intelligent. She'd be worth whatever price she probably charges anybody as an attorney, at least in my definition. And she was laying out a whole bunch of things about election fraud. And because of her level of credibility, she kind of had a whole bunch of people following her, like believing in her story as well. Rudy Giuliani, Mike Lindell, like the MyPillow guy, and a lot of people followed this person who's had a great level of credibility, and she really blasted that whatever it was, Dominion Voting Systems or Smartmatic, I forget the name of the companies now, you know, out of sight, out of mind. But the reality was she really blasted those people as having fraudulent voting systems and there's a lot of election fraud and blah, blah, blah. And they sued or are suing her for like $1.3 billion. So that was a little bit of my buildup for those people that probably now maybe remember the situation. Well, as they were trying to get that $1.3 billion lawsuit, and I know she's good, but I'm probably guessing she never earned $1.3 billion in her career. So she couldn't pay back all of the money, even if they settled. But the reality was, in the attempt to dismiss the lawsuit, her attorney said something like, no one of reasonable, like any, no one reasonable, I think that was the term that he used, no one reasonable would have ever believed that any of those wild claims that she was making were credible. That kind of blew my mind. So I know you're an attorney, maybe there's a defense strategy, but that one kind of bended my mind in so many different ways, it gave me a headache. So do you have any comments on, you know, number one, strategies like that? Number two, maybe if you know a little bit more of that situation, but that one really kind of blew my mind.
Well, the problem we are up against in today's world is that we have basically old ways of communicating information buried into new technologies for communicating information. So that, and when I say that, let's just take, for example, a lawsuit. A lawsuit takes long time to unfold. But in today's world, you can convey the information in a lawsuit very quickly. You file, if there's any interest in it, you file a paper on, you know, at 9 in the morning, and by noon it's all over the Internet if you want to do that. Now, I know no more about the Sidney Powell situation than what you just said, which is what I had heard the same thing at the time. And it is not I find it to be an odd legal strategy that is an effort to argue that basically what it tries to do is shift the burden of any problems that may come from what she said to the person hearing the message rather than the person delivering the message. And so the argument would be no reasonable person would have believed what she was saying. Nobody reasonable could possibly have believed what she was saying. Now, in the law, there's this very odd concept called the reasonable man or the reasonable man standard. And many things in the law are measured against what a reasonable man would be assumed to believe or to understand when they see something or whatever, a reasonable man. My son, who's a lawyer, at one point, as he was beginning law school, actually, just before beginning in the first year or so of law school, worked for former Supreme Court Justice Arthur Goldberg. And I remember his telling me that they were driving one day, and Justice Goldberg asked him in his first semester of law school, Chris, do you know what a reasonable man is? And Chris said, no, I don't. He said, well, don't worry about it. Nobody does. I don't know, and nobody does. It's a very tough thing for law students to grasp that there's a standard that's used to measure what you can expect in the society from the average person, the normal person or the reasonable person. You measure all kinds of things in society against that standard, but that standard isn't really describable. I imagine when I saw that in the paper, I imagined that that was something along the lines of what was being said there. I haven't dug more deeply into it. I'm sure that that was a partial statement of something that was much broader. But our situation as a culture is shifting rapidly and profoundly. And so my analysis of the 2020 election is we had a blue wave and a red wave simultaneously in the 18th and 19th century kind of politics that we've patterned ourselves on and we've used all through the 20th century, you know, winner take all, you know, punch the other guy in the nose, black eye, and that sort of thing. In that world, either red or blue wins. The 2020 election, blue won and red won. You can just look at the down ballot voting and you'll see how much red power has been enhanced. Look at the House of Representatives and see it enhanced. And what we argue, one of our websites is the Transpartisan Review. Citizens for Health posts the Transpartisan Review articles whenever they come out, and usually try to do them four or five times a month. They point out that these red and blue arguments are totally misleading. There is nobody who is always red or always blue. There's just nobody like that. That's a made-up idea. Red and blue as a standard to measure elections is like the reasonable man as a way of measuring behavior in the law. And so if you find yourself if you're being called blue or called red, you're being misrepresented. And then the more interesting even than the fact that there's nothing that's all red or all blue is the fact that they're all moving around all the time. So maybe on a particular issue on a given day, I might be more red than you or more blue than you, but a day later or 2 days later, that could shift. And that's going on all day long with everybody. And then we try to take a snapshot, which we call an election, to set up the system. I could never quite figure out what Sidney Powell was doing in her situation, and I had an even harder time figuring out what Giuliani was doing. Because he was relying on her, or at least sitting next to her and presenting her and endorsing her in ways that were troublesome. I mean, court after court just rejected this stuff. And that's the third point to make, and that is that this red and blue and reasonable man stuff all takes place inside a stylized system, the legal system, or the legal political system. It's stylized. In our book, The Transpartisan Impulse in America, it's called The Voice of the People, The Transpartisan Imperative in American Life. Laurie Chickering and I point out that if you look at the legal structure of society and the politics that creates and maintains it, it's kind of a cross between sumo wrestling and kabuki theater. You know, people dress up in garbs, you know, they wear black robes and get dressed up in suits. And if you're in England, you put a wig on and then you stylize out your positions. There's all stylized. And then the basic idea is, can these stylized forms of presenters push the other stylized form out of the courtroom? That's the first thing that comes up is a motion to dismiss. And then that gets amended, and then if you win that, then that gets amended, and then they probably a whole bunch of more stuff, and they have another motion to dismiss. And they continuously try to dismiss everything before it gets to trial, and that's why both on the civil and criminal side, well over 90% of all cases go to settlement. And so you drop somebody like Sidney Powell making these statements in the middle of that stylized system with everybody dressed up in their garb and making their arguments, what you want to do from the outside is see, well, how do the people inside the argument see what she's doing? And quite clearly, I think there were 60 lawsuits on fraudulent elections, and I think all but one or two of them went against the idea that the elections weren't fair. And I know that in one of the ones that the election wasn't fair side won, it was a matter of moving the separation between the voters from 6 feet to 3 feet or something of that kind. All in all, this stylized, as I say, you know, kabuki theater, sumo wrestling hybrid taking place, It's very important to understand that what goes on inside that framework and what goes on in the world outside of that framework do not always mesh. In fact, there's quite a bit of distance between them. So, maybe it's worth it for me to take a look at the Sidney Powell situation, and maybe next week we can touch a little bit more on it. We'll see what happens with Dominion. It's a very interesting lawsuit.
Yeah, it's fascinating because if you ask me to make an argument of who incited the violence more, I'd say, you know, the violence at the Capitol, I'd say, you know what, we can kind of put a lot of the sperm in the egg, like the beginning of this, to the credibility that a lot of people, maybe even including Donald Trump, put in Sidney Powell and the arguments that she was developing. And I know Mike Lindell is basically, you know, challenging the existence of his own company, MyPillow, based on a lot of the things that I'm sure he had witnessed between her and Giuliani and maybe some other people. So what's really messed up is it's very difficult to find out what the truth is, especially when she used that as an excuse, like any reasonable person would have not even considered this to be serious. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's probably 150 million people in the United States that fall into that category instantly. Like they believed what she was – not believed, they believed that she was credible to a certain extent and probably built their arguments against that.
Well,
so it just...
well, the fundamental story that comes through, which I think is the core story about the Democratic Republic we live in, is to the extent that that lawyer's argument represents her position – the thing that she did that created the problem was to say something to the public that she did not herself believe.
And that just kind of blows my mind.
That's the number one thing you need to watch out for in politics or any other form of advertising. I'm here to tell you, I can't tell you the number of people who have told me over the years that the company that's making this product, which is being accused of the leadership of the company making this product, that's being accused of causing harm to the individuals, don't use the product. The number of times I hear that, my eyes just roll. The president of X that makes Y says he does not use Y because he knows on the basis of their scientific information that there's some concern. You need to understand that in the culture we live in, the world of PR is a distinct and unique world. And the thing that strikes me about that, and when I saw it, I said this to myself, if, in fact, what that lawyer is being quoted as saying represents her view, that means that she herself did not believe what she was saying. And
right.
That is, I think, a very very likely to lead people into behaviors that they might not otherwise engage in.
And that's the part, especially at the extent that we're talking about, is so hard for me to fathom that by that deception, if it was deception, she knowingly knew that she was deceiving and creating that much of a problem in a whole entire, not only country, but probably also global environment. And
well,
that part, just, I don't understand how any human being could ever do that.
I am very suspicious of looking at the way the whole story is coming out, to say that I think there must be a good deal more to it than just that, but I'll see as I look into it more. If I were to hypothesize and say what might be more to it is the fact that you could have had the most fair elections that we have ever had in 2020 and still have room for improvement. Because there are some fundamental problems with the electoral process, very specifically from a pure logic point of view, there's something called Arrow's paradox, which says that you cannot ascertain the preference of a community by aggregating the preferences of the individuals in the community, that will intrinsically and inherently give you a wrong answer. That, in other words, whoever is elected in a system that is a winner-take-all reductionist system, anybody elected in that system will not represent the community from which they are elected. So that's a logic problem. Eros paradox. Your folks can look it up. The audience
how
can look
you,
it up.
Eros paradox. How would you spell Eros?
Arrow is like an arrow that you shoot in the sky and don't know where it's going to land.
So like A-R-R-O-W. Got it. Arrow. Got it.
Yeah. Now let me go further and tell you how we analyze that from the transpartisan point of view. From the transpartisan point of view, the red and the blue collectively, let's talk about it as the Democratic red, Democratic blue and the Republican red, collectively represent 30% of the population. That means 70% of the population is not represented by Republican red and combined with Democratic blue. So 70% of the public is not actual participants in the partisan political process. And as a result, we get a very intense participation from a very, very small part of the public. And then we, as a matter of imagination and projection and belief, we make a leap of faith that whatever those two come up with between them, whoever wins between them, represents what the other 70% is interested in. Now, when you look at that, that's the partisans. The partisans are, I think, roughly 40% of roughly 50% or so of the electorate. Ranges different years, different amounts, but between 40% and 60% do not ever register to vote. So that's half your electorate right there. Then that's when I say those are people eligible under the Constitution. Then of that number, 40% are roughly register as independents. About 30 or so percent, 32%, something like that, register as Democrats, and then about 25, 30, 26%, something like that, register as Republicans. When you add the folks that are not registered at all, and the folks that are registered as independent, you come up with an amount that begins to approach that 70% that I was talking about. Then there are a whole bunch of other folks who are locked out of the electorate in various ways, such as the various states that don't allow felons to vote, there are a number of blocks of people out. Now, when you start looking at that, the puzzle, the problem is that this selected group votes and is treated as if the outcome of that vote represents the entire group, and it doesn't. So underneath the Sidney Powell argument is the fact that in 2020, elections were held in which people were elected that did not necessarily represent the communities within which they were running for office. Now, it's a good argument in the sense that we need to fix that, but it's a bad argument in the sense that it's always been that way, and it actually was better in 2020 than usual. And so we're moving in a direction of things getting better and better. Somebody like Sidney Powell, I don't know if she ever had any experience in law before this. It's a field of law. I mean, there are experts. No, I've never heard anyone say Sidney Powell, election law expert. I've only heard her say a Sidney Powell, articulate lawyer. Let's just say there are laws, and when you get into those laws, you discover that underneath it all, we're working diligently away at cleaning up this whole problem. So how do we clean the problem up? Well, Nevada for years, 20, 25, 30 years, has had what they call the none of the above ballot. No, I think it's actually longer than that. So when you vote in Nevada, you can vote candidate A, B, C, or D, or none of the above. And they count the none of the above ballot. And there have been occasions, I remember back there was a governor's race in which none of the above got 21% of the vote. These are now you're having, like, Maine, for example, has a thing which is called preferential voting. And so you vote for your candidates, you vote 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, let's say that. And then they count your number one votes. And when that's all done and all the number one votes have been counted, then you go and count the number two votes and so forth. And when you come up with that, that's logically a better way of coming up with who it is that the community prefers to represent them. I'm only putting this all together to say, yes, there are things that need to be done about our electoral system. And those things are underway, and they've been changing year in and year out and moving along, and 2020 was better than 2016. I suspect that 2024 will be better. Interventions to try to alter that progress and take it back to where it was in 2016 is going on across the South, apparently. It looks like it is anyway. And that needs to be looked at with enormous care, because they are making decisions that just don't sound right. I mean, if somebody says you can't give a sandwich and a bottle of water to somebody who has to stand in line to vote for 10 hours, that's a misdemeanor. That is not an idea of cleaning up fraudulent elections. So, and it's always really important to remember that anything that shows up as a part of a legislative agenda in any legislative body anywhere in the world is political. And the forces of the culture in that area are questing back and forth to be in charge. And, we'll see what happens. It's a fascinating thing to watch as we clean up our electoral process. And it's been going on since 1800, when we had the biggest logical problem in voting that we've ever had, requiring a constitutional amendment to fix. And that was, they decided that the person who got the most votes would be president, and the person that got the second most votes would be vice president. They held the vote, and the two candidates that got the number one amount of votes were equal. They had the same number of votes in the Electoral College. And so they had two guys, and how do you figure out which one got the most votes when they had the same number of electoral votes? That was a huge crisis, lasted months and months in the legislature. And we have had those kind of crises over and over in cleaning up and tightening up our electoral process. We now have a situation.
Let me interrupt you sure. Only because you mentioned that you have a conference that you have to be on, and we're going to run late if you continue talking. So let's continue this. I want to hear more, but I want to honor the idea that you have an appointment. So we're going to catch Jim Turner maybe next week on Building Fortunes Radio. So if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens, you'll be able to hear Jim again. That's buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens. So, Jim, thanks for being here. I just want to honor the idea that you have an appointment. I don't want to be the reason why you're late. So we're going to catch you next time on Building Fortunes
Radio.
Okay,
thank you very much. And you didn't say anything. I just talked the entire half hour.
Oh, I loved it. I learn more when your lips are moving.
Well, these are important issues that the culture is going through, and what I'm hoping to be able to do here and any other place I am is to help people get the tools to understand. And I noticed on my clock I have one more minute, and I just want to say, understand, we had a red wave and a blue wave that took place in 2020, and by and large, the electoral process handled it well, and we came up with the very clear statement of what's going on in the culture, which is we're split on where we want to go in terms of specific political acts. As a culture, as a society, we're very, very clear how we want to go. That's why that 70% is so important. That 70% needs to be brought into this process. Trying to close out people is going to make it get worse. Bringing in more people is going to make it get better. So anyway, that's my thoughts for today.
Yep.
Thanks
we'll
a lot.
See you next
Peter.
Week.
Appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com.